Welcome back, everyone, to Citywide Blackout, the podcast that brings you the best artists from around the world. I'm your host, Max Bowen. In this episode, author Dr. Matthew Ehrlich joins me to talk about his new book, The Veil Method, Getting Better, Not Just Older. This book is focused on how to live a healthier lifestyle as you get older. But frankly, it's not just for those hitting their 60s. This book covers a lot of different subjects, from exercise to the plant-based diet, and even the importance of mindfulness. But this is not meant just people who are hitting like 60, 65, right? This is kind of how you prepare to get old and to be healthy when you get to that point.
Right. The same principles really apply whether you're 40 or 65. And if you look at where the world is going with some genetic modifications and things, 65 may not be that old in the future. My twins are 18, and you know, they're saying that for kids born today, they're expecting at least 50% will make it to 100, and 120 isn't crazy if some of these genetic drugs and supplements and genetic modifications to aging genes turn forward. You know, it could be a whole new world that we need to prepare for. But especially, by the way, for you at Boston, so much of this research, you know, is going on at Harvard's aging, you know, medical school, their aging lab. And but in any case, certainly, so the principles, foundations remain the same. You know, what's healthy to eat at 40 is going to be what's healthy to eat at 65. And the exercise programs and getting into a routine that becomes a lifestyle, not a struggle, is better done at 40 than someone who comes to us at 60, you know, because you really want to build those foundations where you enjoy it and you've gotten over the hump, you know, the pain to get the routines going and get yourself really into it. The January New Year's thing that goes on every year, but really to develop a program that you enjoy and see the benefits from. You know, one of the things we've learned is that, and this is true in medicine for many things, to get someone to stick with a program, you have to give them a reward. There has to be something good that comes out of it for them. And if they don't see that, they won't stick with it. So we know it's there for you. It's just a matter of getting it going. But yes, you know, it's really middle age and beyond, whatever you want to define that as. Our 40s certainly is the beginning, especially, you know, for all of us.
You mentioned earlier that your kids have said that they expect half of them to make it to 100, and you're definitely right, because I can remember a time when hitting 100 was like, oh man, call the papers, breaking news, someone makes to 100. These days it's more like, oh, you made to 100, good for you, move on, because it's just not like as big a deal. I think people are definitely becoming, I think, a little more cognizant of why they have to take care of themselves. We definitely have this coming generation, especially. One thing that I was really curious about is when it comes to getting over the hump, getting that routine, how do you do that? How do you like change someone's lifestyle, which in some case they may have been living for the past like half century?
A lot of the folks we get to work with are sort of into it to some degree already, and are really looking to improve and fine tune. We get folks that they tell us their Boston Marathon time and where they're trying to get to and where they're plateaued at. But some folks certainly don't have it down yet. It's scientifically for us, it's a matter, you know, we start sort of in a physiology lab where we're analyzing, you know, what's your body fat, what's your weight, what's your ideal weight, and then getting to something called this lactate threshold test, which is what I describe in the book, and I show some graphs of what that's like. Yeah. So basically, it's a treadmill test where you're running on a treadmill, you have a mask on your face, sort of like the old VO2 max test, if anyone's familiar with that. It's very similar, and you're breathing in and out of a mask so that we can measure your expired gases and how much carbohydrate you're burning and fat. And then you have a heart monitor on, so we're recording, obviously, your heart rate. And the other piece we add to it is that as you're running, every 5 minutes we make the treadmill faster. And as you're running, we take a little finger stick, a little capillary stick to the tip of your finger, like they would do for a glucose test, you know, if you've ever seen that, and measure on the spot your blood lactate. Now, when we're exercising, and you feel like you've had it, your muscles are screaming to you, that's because your blood lactate levels have risen. You know, we start at a 1.0 baseline, most of us. Like, so if we just took our test sitting here talking to each other, that's probably about where we'd be. And but as we start moving and metabolizing and burning the sugars and our muscles are working, that lactate level is rising. When we have marathoners, their blood lactate, we're keeping them about 2.5. And when we're pushing people toward their aerobic limits, you know, how fast and hard they can go, it starts creeping up to 3.4, and then they're getting close to about had it. So by measuring your different heart rates at different activity levels, you know, how fast the treadmill has to go, what's your heart rate, and what's your lactate level, we can graph it out and then very easily tell you, Max, when you go out to run, this is the target heart range we want to see on your wristwatch heart monitor. And we're very able scientifically to prove that this benefits Tour de France bikers that we've had the privilege to work with at UC Boulder, as well as, you know, just weekend warriors and everyday recreational athletes. So there's a real science rather than just telling you, go out in the street, run. When you feel like you can't talk, that's your heart rate. yeah, there are different things you'll read about. But anyway, that's sort of a little bit of science on how we guide people. But you know, like everything, you start small. You know, when I started running in college, I had a little diary. And I remember my first one, I showed a little map. I made it around the block or something, you know. And then you just keep going and going and you got to keep it fun. And it might be something else. You might be into cycling. You might be swimming. You know, believe it or not, we can do the swimming test in a special swim tank on swimmers while they're swimming. So for bikers, we put them on a stationary bike that measures their watt output. You know, so we're scientifically trying to show you the heart rates that are right for you, because that's not going to be the same as, you know, the person next to you. That's a little bit of the science behind how we do it. Yeah, the rest is a lot motivational. And knowing if you've got someone, you know, one of the great things about kids and adolescents and teenagers is, I mean, they ask you these questions and it goes right to the bone, you know, like, no BS. Are you willing to do this? Are you into it? You know, what do you believe? What do you think? And they challenge you. And, you know, we've got to challenge people too, you know, not someone wanting their spouse to come work, but, you know, them themselves really wanting to make a change.
What led you to want to write this book? I mean, like, this is obviously like what you do for a living, like this is your job, but is this sort of like the culmination of like years and years of work, or was it more like an aha moment where you thought, I'm doing this book, this is happening?
Yeah, it's a bit of an aha moment. Part of it came, well, I mean, frankly, you know, as the clock moves on, we're all getting older, and I, over the years, you know, working with patients, particularly elderly patients, and seeing how we age and middle-agers and, you know, what's a lifestyle? What's a healthy lifestyle? And what science is behind it? Not someone just, you know, spouting ideas that sound good, but what do we know scientifically? And could I put together something that someone could follow as a lifestyle guide? And so, you know, there's nutritional aspects, there's the fitness aspects, and then there's just some doctoring stuff. You know, I'm out socially and either the husband or the wife will say to me, well, I have a glass of wine, you know, oh, you know, gosh, my wife is really snoring. And I'll say, well, do you ever notice him or her gasp, or tell me about the breathing? Do they stop breathing? You know, because things like sleep apnea, people don't often understand that, how simply we can test for this and sometimes save lives with it. So a lot of things about sleep aren't just normal with getting older and really are abnormal. And so if you're not sleeping, when you get up to start your day, you know, you're not in fit and shape to exercise, you're half asleep and really not into a good workout, you know. So sleep and rest and recovery are important. They're important for athletes, you know. So I've tried to make it fairly comprehensive or holistic. And so that what drove me was, I think, just wanting to share this and help people understand. Because as I've learned this stuff, it's been eye-opening to me and I hope eye-opening for the readers.
Okay. I'd also like to ask about your own health journey. Did you go through a lot of trial and error trying to figure out a system, whether it's diet or exercise and like other elements that really worked for you?
You know, it's interesting. My dad was quite overweight. He was like 240 pounds. And I have an older brother who kind of fit in his model, you know, and I looked at that as a kid and said, you know, I really want to try to stay fit. And I really started running distance running in college, you know, and that fed into med school. And I found there was something I could maintain even as an intern, you know, like with the crazy hours we worked. Gosh, I dragged myself. I was in San Francisco. I was lucky to be there for that. And I dragged myself to the marina and go jog. And I was convinced I wasn't going to make it through my internship year slugging coffee. And so the fitness part for me has always kind of been there. And, you know, every time I go to the starting line on a race, I'm racing me, you know, can I keep up with where I was? And one of my favorite races here as a Coloradan is the Boulder Boulder. And, you know, you get 40,000 runners. It's a tremendous, it's one of the most organized things you'll ever see. I think Atlanta has the Peachtree Classic, which I have not run, but it's about a similar size thing. But they start you in packs of groups, I guess, close to 1,000 people. And one group takes off and 30 seconds later or so they stage the next group and you just keep going. So you start the race and where they put you at from the start line is based on last year's time or your qualifying time. So I go to the start line with my letters, you know, group BB or BA or C and saying, you know, can I keep that? And as I add a year each year, can I hold my group? And so the running fitness piece has been there. Part that wasn't was nutrition. You know, I always ate what I thought was a healthy diet. White meat, chicken and fish and, you know, lean meats and veggies and things like that. But, you know, the evidence has really mounted about the benefits of a plant-based diet. And there's so much evidence out there that it's to a point where in medicine, I don't think we really can deny it or ignore it. And so trying to get that message out, but with a voice to some moderation. I think that one of the mistakes the plant-based world is making is not welcoming everyone. You know, it's a very strict community. If you step outside the boundaries, you'll sort of get scolded, I find, at some meetings and potlucks for, you know. So I think we have to welcome everyone and realize it's a journey and everything isn't going to work for everyone, but the less, you know, animal meat we can consume and the more, you know, legumes and beans and you know, plant-based proteins and just good veggies and whole foods, not prepared things in the freezer county that say, you know, a vegetarian meal, but they're loaded with salt and garlic and whatever. But there's nothing wrong with garlic, but I just mean as
protein. I hope not.
No, I like garlic, but processed foods. So for me, you know, my cholesterols were going bad. And just a genetic thing, and genes are so big a part of our aging and what happens to us. I found that I was able to bring my cholesterol in line, my triglycerides, and so I had a reward from that, you know, and a lot of fun because, you know, my wife is strict meat and potatoes. Like, you could chase her out of the room with a piece of broccoli, like you know, like a Dracula movie or something. And so... So now she has to deal with me. So initially that was enough of a challenge. And then my son, who's now a freshman in college, he went plant-based and that just drove her nuts. Because now she has two people at the table.
She's outnumbered now.
Now it's even two and two. So anyway, but it's a journey. But just so for me, the nutrition part came when I was trying to get some health benefits and concerns over that. Mm-hmm.
I have definitely heard a lot about the plant-based diet. I have friends who have gone, you know, vegan, vegetarian. Are these all the same thing or are they?
No. And, you know, honestly, and I think I have this in one of my blogs, you know, on the website. But when we say plant-based, what's really in the literature, like if you read a book, I mentioned a few great books, How Not to Die, you know, Michael Greger, who's a colleague of mine, you know, I know Michael, when the docs that you read about, when you read their books about health benefits, they're really talking vegan, nothing that comes from anything with a head, you know, no milk, no dairy, no eggs, pretty strict. Vegetarian is a little older term. It has a lot more potential confusion because you can be a fish eater and be a pescatarian. So a vegetarian who doesn't eat, you know, red meat possibly, but eats fish. You know, you can be an ovo, lacto, vegetarian, eat dairy and eggs, you know. So yes, there's many different types. The Seventh-day Adventists out in Loma Linda have been studied. You know, it's a great U.S. population of long-lived people eating plant-based diet. But, you know, the subgroup in that group of Seventh-day Adventists were ones that ate some occasional fish. So it's not, you know, I don't know that we have to be as strict or make people feel as penned in. But yes, it's not all the same. And I think when most people talk plant-based, they're sort of talking about the more stricter, you know, vegan diet.
How do you find a diet that works for someone? I mean, like, obviously we all have like different dietary needs and structures and so forth. What's the process for finding something that is going to really work with you, but is also going to be something that you're going to enjoy eating? Because I feel like the biggest challenge of diets is to actually like what you're eating instead of saying, okay, let's get through lunch now. Holy crap, this sucks.
Well, it's a little easier for me to know how someone's doing because of the lab data, and I'll explain that in a moment. But, well, maybe we can start there. You have to eat something that's going to nourish your body, that's going to give you the calories you need, the protein you need, which is the number one fear among non-vegetarians. Where am I going to get the protein? Mm. So in my book, I try to show my transition and the tricks that I've used and show portion sizes. So when we talk about quinoa and how much protein and how much carbohydrate, you know, what's in quinoa, look at the serving size I show in the book, and you'll see it's heaping on top of a salad. Whereas, and garbanzo beans, you know, how big is a half a cup? That's like, you know, when you look at salads that you get, you know, I'll see things on the menu, quinoa salad, and they like sprinkled a few grains like it was pepper on top of the salad. So the way you'll know is if your body, if you're feeling well. We don't want people, it's fine to lose fat weight, but we don't want you losing lean muscle mass, particularly as we get older. You know, as we age, it's harder to build lean muscle, and we don't want to give any up. So understand, so in our lab, we see what someone's percent body fat is. So if someone comes back and they've lost weight, that may be a great thing, depending upon their percent body fat, as long as it's in a decent range. But if we see that that's been lean muscle, then it's not great, and then we're all over them. You know, it's a little tricky getting accurate, and I explain some of the tests for body fat in the book, you know, different ways we can get at that. But yeah, you will lose weight on a plant-based diet if you're not eating, you know, sweets and things like that. I mean, think about it. You don't have the saturated fats from meat. You know, if you cook red meat or chicken and turkey, look at Thanksgiving, look at the fat in the bottom of the pan. You know, that, I got to tell you, because I'm thin from my running, and this was a big thing to me. I was really upset when I was converting to plant-based because I kept losing weight. And my wife is like, you're getting too skinny. And I said to, I was working with an MD who's been into this for years. And he said, well, what'd you weigh in high school? I said, high school? Who could remember that? I don't know. You know what I weighed in high school. I'm looking at my son. I see how skinny he is. I mean,
maybe like I don't want to,
you know. And so I dropped from like 161. And I thought that was a 32 waist pant. I thought I was a fairly trim runner, and I dropped to like 151. I've gotten it back up to like 153, but that was a lot. And finally stopped. I didn't think I could take it, you know, but healthy fats, avocados, nuts, you need that to keep on some of the weight. But a lot of it, understands, in our head. You know, a lot of people say to me, oh, I need the protein. I can't live without protein. And there's plenty of protein in plant foods. I mean, you have enough. We do not have people on plant-based diets who are protein deficient, you know. So a lot of it is we grew up with, you know, milk, it makes a body good. You need that for calcium or whatever the slogan is. And, you know, believing the Dairy Association, all the ads for red meat on TV and things. And, you know, it's very hard. I found it very hard myself. In my transition, I was slugging these just awful protein, plant protein, ground pea powder. It tastes like chalk. Chocolate flavored, and my, you know, my family looking at me go, what are you doing, Dad? And I said, well, I'm worried if I'm getting enough protein. But you start realizing after you're thriving, you know, you're running just as well, you're doing fine, your weight stabilized, you feel good. You know, you don't really need that. And I go through that in the book. But, you know, if that's, you know, something, a little pacifier to help you get through the transition, you know, I don't have problems with people doing that. But yeah, so you have to feel good in all those parameters. If you're overweight, it's fine to lose weight, but let's make sure it's fat and that you're getting all the protein you need. You know, because you can't just eat lettuce leaves on a plant-based diet. You know, you need, there's some in quinoa, which is a total protein with all the key amino acids. You need B12 if you're plant-based, you know, so you have to take a B12 vitamin supplement. But you got to live too. You know, I mean, I put it in the book, how do you go to Italy and you walk past that gelato stand and your head doesn't twist and you know, I mean, are you really going to die if you eat a scoop of that gelato? No. I mean, I was in Spain and this farmer was boasting, you know, about his Iberian ham and he was so proud and he brought it out for us, as a small group to sample. Tell a guy, no, I can't taste this. You know, I'm vegan. I mean, what's that little taste of Iberian ham? So, you know, just chill out a little bit. Chill, as our college kids say, right? And just relax. But have fun with it. But the more you can go, you know, as one of the docs who's written about this for years, Dean Ornish, he wrote years ago, he started in 1978, a book about reversing heart disease on a plant-based diet. And he wrote a book years later called The Spectrum, saying, look, it's a spectrum. From one end, you know, to the full vegan end, and the more you can go that way, the better. But you know, there's room for some flexibility and making sure you're thriving and having fun and socializing. Don't give up meals with friends. We have friends that are vegan that won't go out to dinner because they're afraid the restaurant's not going to have something for them, or you know, this and that. And certainly here in the Vail area, you know, we have wonderful restaurants for a lot of our visiting skiers and tourists, but we're not like a big metropolitan city that has lots of, you know, vegetarian options, things like that. So it's hard, you know, eating out and things like that. So I think you got to open up a little flexibility to it.
I definitely agree with that, because there are some folks I know who are so intense about their dieting that they even the notion of breaking, like, no, I can't do that. I'll totally backslide. It's like, dude,
right?
You're gonna make a mistake. You're gonna stumble. It's gonna happen. Don't worry about it.
I think what you said is actually very, very wise. Because I've heard people say that too. Like, I asked a friend, you know, why are you so nervous about this? You know, I drink just nut milks, you know, almond milk and soy milk and stuff like that. But, you know, you can't make a crema as good. And I was making some cappuccinos for company and I used some skim milk. This guy went wild, you know, and he said he thought I was like a defector to the dark side. And I said, well,
So meat and milk are the dark side? Jeez.
That it was a, you know, like what, an ounce or a half of skim milk on top of a cappuccino.
Traitor.
But I do think you said something that I think is key. People are afraid that they're going to relapse. In other words, it's like an alcoholic. They treat it like if I have a drink, it's not alcoholism. It's not, this is a dietary choice. It's not an addiction. And it's not if you, you know, a glass of wine, you're going to go off the wagon because you had a gelato. You know, I mean, I think we have enough willpower, but I do think that's part of it, because some of the friends that are so strict, I think they're really worried that they will slip back.
Yeah.
You know,
the thing that I've discovered when it comes to like my own, you know, health journey is that this is not a temporary thing. It's not the kind of thing that you're going to do for a week or a month or 6 months. This is the rest of your life. If you want to be healthy, you've got to commit to it for the rest of your life, because it's not like you can say, okay, I'll stop after 6 months and then I'll just be this healthy forever, but I'll go back to what I did before. That's not how it works.
It's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle. It's a choice. And it's one that each one has to make to the degree they can make it.
Exactly. So since we're still on the subject of food, I know that your book also touches on the misinformation out there, but also the fad diets. And I want to really talk about that, because I have a huge problem with all these fads out there. What are some of the more dangerous, either misinformations or like fad diets that people are kind of dealing with right now?
Yeah. You know, we try to get people away from smoothies. One thing I just wanted to mention, because you mentioned the protein shake or the smoothie, and you know, we want you to chew your food, take the time to chew it and get the nutrients out of it. And you know, that's, you'll see the, along the words plant-based, when you read books about the movement now, you'll see whole food plant-based diet. And what they mean is they want you eating whole veggies and servings of veggies and salads and chewing and digesting and getting everything out of it, not throwing it in a Vitamix and guzzling it down. And there's so many fads out there. I mean, what I would say is show me the evidence. Where is, you know, when someone starts spouting off about something, where's the evidence to support? If you're going to tell someone, if I'm going to sit here as an MD and tell someone this is, you know, how we think you should eat or try to eat, do I have really the evidence to support that? Or am I just, you know, spouting off some idea I had that morning at breakfast? And there's so many diets, and you're right about it, but show me the money. Show me the proof. It's there, you know, and that's why I pointed to, and it's in my book. I put several books that I reference where, you know, you can learn about this stuff, but it's there for plant-based. The others are, you know, the keto diet and the paleo, and you don't want to go that way.
Yeah.
And yeah,
I think unless like your doctor tells you to, if the doctor says, oh yeah, this would actually work for you based on your health situation, then sure. But I think that's the key thing. Don't read a diet and say, okay, I think I would enjoy this, I'll do it. Talk to your doctor first, I think, is probably the most important thing. Talk to your doctor, a nutritionist.
I think your body will talk to you. You'll know when
yes,
you're doing
it will.
Something.
Yes, it will.
It will. You'll know when you're doing something that's good for you and works, you know.
For people who are getting older, you mentioned that it is harder to like lose weight and put on the muscle. What are some of the better exercises out there for someone who is, you know, getting up there in years but wants to, you know, stay in shape, stay healthy?
One thing to be aware of, I did some work for a while with a company called Cenogenics, and they were very big into this sort of a program. But one of the things that we tracked, and low testosterone is a really significant thing. And, you know, primary care medicine is not really caught on to this. They don't routinely in family practice, you know, order testosterone levels, but you really want, you know, not only a total testosterone level, but a free testosterone level, because testosterone is bound by a protein in the blood. So some men have a decent, and women have a decent testosterone level as a total, but because the protein is bounded up a lot, the free that's available can be low. So you want to look at both of those things and replace it, because that's key. If you don't have that, you won't be able to build muscle mass and lose weight. But otherwise, it's you're asking, are there specific exercises?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like everything else. You want to do your core and a basic circuit, you know, and if you can, ideally work it in your week twice a week to get to the gym and you know, do the basic things that I think most of us understand, you know, going through chest and arms and legs and some core work. But don't overlook the testosterone. And I would ask your doctor on a physical, you know, and of course we look at bioidentical hormones in men and women, and but for guys, you know, we got to get over the ego. You know, we know women have menopause, but men have what's called andropause, and our T levels after 40 really drop significantly. And it's amazing. I've had, you know, overweight guys that have just been thrilled when they're testosterone, and they feel better. They're more energetic. Their sex drive is better, and they drop that that body fat they can't lose. So that's a big thing we find in workups that get overlooked.
We've touched on this a little bit in terms of the diet and the exercise, but I want to talk a little more about some of the general health challenges that the folks reading your book might be going through, especially as they get up into their 50s and 60s.
Well, sleep, as I said, is a big thing because it's a vicious domino chain. You know, you knock a domino down, the others go down. If you're not getting the rest, how do you have the energy to go to the gym or to do a meaningful run or bike ride or whatever it is? So, you know, sleep hygiene, I mean, there have been books written about this, you know, but a number of the ideas are, one, you know, don't eat for a couple hours before bed. And there's other reasons for longevity that we believe there should be 12 hours between breakfast and dinner the night before. So sleep is key. Other challenges that people deal with, well, overweight, which the plant-based diet will knock down fast. Men seem to lose weight a little more easily on it than women, but we see obviously both do. Energy, you know, that all ties into everything from nutrition to being fit and aerobic. You know,
do you need to have both parts of it, diet and exercise, to like maintain your health, or is it possible to just get by on just like on just the diet?
Yeah, diet's a big part, and sure. Certainly it's the part that people can most easily control. You can get by without the exercise piece, but it won't be as ideal. And at a cellular level, you know, we're learning things about genes that work to repair damage to our DNA. A number of folks out there taking supplements to try to raise the level of something called NAD. And they found that exercise raises NAD levels. So, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of folks that, as I said, that's where the commitment piece comes in. You know, I try to figure out at the beginning if someone's really committed or has, you know, really wants to be there for that part. But you know, any piece of this that you do, any piece of the Vail method, whether it's nutrition, exercise, getting a rest for your brain, that's another part. You know, in this world we live of constant stimulation. I mean, all the social media and things going off 24/7 on phones, and you know, there's just no getting away from it and quieting our minds. And people are up in the middle of the night with insomnia, thinking about things upsetting them from earlier in the day. And so I did put a short chapter in on meditation. You know, I try to meditate every day. I can't every day. If I'm out for a run or something, I have to like sometimes pick one or the other, but I do feel better on days that I do. And for other people, meditation, as I explain in the book, doesn't have to be necessarily sitting with your legs crossed or on a chair, you know, trying to be still. You know, for here in Colorado, folks go for walks and, you know, on trails, and they fly fish and watch the little bobber in their brain there, and they hear the river, and, you know, their mind is at rest and peace. And I think these are all ways of stilling our mind. And one of the chapters is, you know, telling your mind to shut the F up. And but you'll notice I just said asterisk, we didn't use the word.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's part of it. And I included that for that reason. You know, that's, you know, mental health in America is a whole other story. We have around the world, but you know, look at all the craziness out there. But part of being mentally healthy is quieting our minds and being able to still it and deal with all the constant stimulation we have out there.
Sleep is so essential, especially in this culture. We have this obsession with the grinders, the ones who are out there working all the time. You know, they sleep for like, you know, like 2 hours a night. Yeah. They're always working. It's like, I think it was like, that's really great, except you're going to drop one day. Like literally, you're just going to keel over from sheer exhaustion.
We get people come in for lactate tests sometimes, and we're actually able to measure the glycogen level in muscles. I covered that in the book with a cool little ultrasound test. We just wave this wand over your quadricep muscle and can tell, and your calf, and see how much glycogen stores. So we know if someone's eating and getting enough, you know, carbs and glycogen. And, you know, in America, we have this fear of carbs are bad. Carbs are killing. You need carbs. It's your fuel.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, look at athletes. I mean, you know, have you ever seen what some of the Olympic athletes eat? Some of them 6,000 calories a day. I mean, they just can eat. So carbs, if you're burning it and exercising and using it, don't be afraid of them. You need carbohydrates. And we have this obsession, especially for those that don't exercise, where they got to limit their carbs and everything. But carbs are going to make up the biggest percent of your calories. We'd like to see it coming from long chain carbs, like from vegetables rather than pastas and white rice and bread.
Yeah, definitely.
But at the end of the day, understand when it's broken down and digested, it's all carbs.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Most of your calories should be coming from carbs. And, you know, plant-based diets are very low in protein. You know, sense of calories, you're looking at 5 to 10% of calories in a day coming in from protein. Hmm. If you really eat a whole base plant-based diet, so carbs are huge. Don't be afraid of them. That's my point.
And, you know, no, you're right.
When people come in, no, because we get some folks that are trying to restrict their carbs.
Yeah.
And we've had this. And we go to do a lactate test, and they're exhausted. Plus, they got up early at 4:30 Endeavor to come, whatever, or that's what they're doing at home to exercise because they can't fit it in their day unless they wake themselves up exhausted to an alarm at 4:30 to try to work out for an hour. And you know, the pro athletes, it's, you know, obviously they're fortunate they don't have to do this. Their whole day can be set up, and they're not going to cut their sleep short, anything like that. But we will send some people home that are like slumping on the treadmill, like we look at these folks and feed them and say, okay, before you come back, we want you to, and we recheck their carbohydrate, you know, but a glycogen test, and then they thrive on the treadmill. So don't calorie and carbohydrate restrict yourself. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Try not to do sugars and that's
yeah. So just be kind of like smart about it. Don't just like inhale like all the bread, obviously, but don't be afraid of it. I mean, carbs are not the enemy. They are a essential part of your diet.
It's the gas in your tank.
Exactly.
You need.
Well, Dr. Ehrlich, it's been absolutely awesome talking to you. I'm going to go hit the gym now, actually, because now I'm just feeling inspired. I'm going to hit the gym. I'm going to go check my diet again, make sure I'm doing things right. But before we go, where can folks learn more about you and get a copy of your book?
Sure. So Vail Method, V-A-I-L, method, one word, .com is my website. We have a link to Amazon and for the book. And, you know, it's obviously Kindle and paperback. And also I'll keep updating a blog on there for folks about newer things and aging and get out there and read and ask some questions. And I'm happy to help. And I appreciate the chance to talk to your listeners.
Hi, this is singer Kate Eppers, and you're listening to Citywide Blackout.
All right, folks, that brings this episode to a close. I want to thank Dr. Ehrlich for joining me and you, the listeners, for tuning in each and every week. Don't forget to listen to me on Podbean, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, and every Saturday at 10 p.m. on Boston Free Radio. To close things out, I've got two great songs from Kim Kondrashoff. The first one is called Bathtub Boogie, followed by Talk to Me. As always, keep those ears open.
Boogie woogie, bathtub boogie. Boogie woogie, bathtub boogie. A bathing beauty like you, would you be so inclined to want a bath? Come boogie. I hope you don't think I'm way out of line to want a bath, dumb boogie. We're having plenty of laughs, not to mention the wine. Let's have a bath,
boogie woogie, bathtub boogie,
tub boogie,
boogie woogie, bathtub boogie.
Good clean fun, that's all it will be. I give you my word, I guarantee. My intention, if you must know, pure as the driven snow. I know just the place. It's right down the street. But we can bath.
Have a bath.
Tub boogie. It's the best hotel.
We're in a hotel suite.
But we can bath.
Boogie woogie.
Tub boogie.
They
say the hot tub in there is simply a treat. For a bath,
boogie woogie, bathtub boogie,
tub boogie,
boogie woogie, bathtub boogie.
Good clean fun, that's all it will be. I give you my word, I guarantee. My intention, and you must know, is as pure as the driven snow. Attention.
said a single word since I picked you up tonight. You just give me dirty looks and it's giving me a fright. What did I say or do to get you so uptight? What can I say or do to make you feel alright? I feel just like a hound dog barking up the wrong tree, to croaking like a big old bullfrog, to get you to talk to me, to get you to talk to me. Was it last Friday when I had a bit too much? Fell and broke my ankle, I had to use you for a crutch. Oh, when I jumped up with the band and started singing out of key. If I made a fool of someone, I'd have to say that fool was me. I feel just like a hound dog barking up the wrong tree, to croaking like a big old bullfrog, to get you to talk to me, to get you to talk to me. If I did something to make you mad, and if you would only tell me, it might not be so bad. I feel just like a hound dog barking up the wrong tree, to croaking like a big old bullfrog, to get you to talk to me, to get you to talk to me, to get you to talk to me.